Hello, this is William Fink, and this is Christogenia Internet Radio. Today is Friday, October 14th, 2022. This program is being pre-recorded Friday afternoon because we are traveling, and I don't have internet reliable enough to record live in the mountains of South Carolina. Here I am going to present something that I will call Bible Blunders. Ultimately, this may turn into something of a series, so I will even add part one. When I made several forum posts addressing certain things in Scripture, which are commonly misunderstood, a friend from our forum and our chats suggested that I compile them into a program called Bible Mysteries. But these really are not mysteries. Rather, they are blunders because the solution to understanding them is in the Scripture. And for that reason, we really have no excuse not to understand them. But because mainstream churches do not understand them and get them wrong pretty consistently, of course they are mysteries to most people. Some of these traps I have fallen into myself, not because I made mistakes, but because we often trust others to be correct, especially our teachers. And we repeat things that they say without investigating them for ourselves. And that's, I've been burned quite a few times doing that the last 20 years. That's just the way it is. I'm sure I also make mistakes, but I hope that the people that read or listen to my work go and check it out for themselves. So that's a responsibility that we all have before we believe anything to make sure that it's true. So here we are going to discuss Queen Athaliah of Judah, a trap which I managed to avoid, and also the identity of the Rechabites of the book of Jeremiah and the Kenites of 2 Chronicles chapter 2, a trap which I was caught in until recently because I followed older teachers without giving the subject a sufficiently full consideration. So, here we have it. We will begin with proof that Athaliah, the queen of Judah, was not the daughter of Jezebel. I had actually written Clifton a proof similar to this one, probably, if I had to guess, sometime between 2002, 2003, and 2006. I'm sure that the notes are in my prison papers, which I still have not been able to unpack after nearly 14 years. So someday, if I ever live long enough, I'll be able to unpack those notes and find those papers. I have no clue when that could possibly be. That's okay. This subject came up in the Christogenia Forum, and I had reconstructed my arguments in my papers with Clifton years ago, and posted this on July 17th, 2022, a proof that Athaliah, the queen of Judah, was not the daughter of Jezebel. And I was sort of surprised by this when I looked up when this issue was raised. I looked up Athaliah on Google, which I had never had cause to do in the past, and saw thousands and thousands of references that she was the daughter of Jezebel, and it's wrong. Years ago, in June of 2009, I made a presentation called Women in the Genealogy of Christ. Only rather recently did I realize that that paper needs an update. And that's because I never had a church background. And therefore, I never knew that the churches teach that Jezebel is an ancestor of Christ. That is what at least most of them teach. And it is absolutely wrong. So in that early podcast, I discussed Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba, three of which women are specifically mentioned in the genealogy of Christ in the Gospels, as it is presented in the Gospel of Matthew. But I never knew there was a need to discuss Jezebel. Here I shall prove that Jezebel could not have been the mother of Athaliah, the queen of Judah, in spite of the fact that Ahab was her father. But this entire story of Ahab's descendants is sometimes confusing, not only because of the way in which years are counted, but also because there are two men named Jehoram, sometimes spelled Joram, a son of Ahab and a son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and there are also two men named Ahaziah, a son of Ahab, and a grandson of Jehoshaphat, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah. So when we mention Jehoram or Ahaziah, we always need to check to make certain that we have the correct one. I do not know whether this will be easy to follow, especially in an audio presentation. So I will not depart greatly from my original forum presentation, which was in two parts, an initial argument and, once some questions were raised, a clarification of that argument. First, the beginning of the rule of Ahab. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 29. From verse 29. And in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord, of Yahweh, above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sons of Jeroboam, in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. Actually, Ethbaal was the king of Sidon, but he was really the king of Tyre. And Tyre, Sidon was a subject state of Tyre in those days after the divided kingdom. So Ethbaal was the king of Tyre, but he wasn't a descendant of Hiram. If we read in Flavius Josephus in his book Against Appian, it explains that Ethbaal was a priest of Baal, and he had staged a coup and slew the descendants of Hiram, of the famous Hiram from the time of David and Solomon. He slew his descendants and seized the throne of Tyre for himself. So he was really a pagan king, a pagan priest who had made himself the king and was evidently successful. And his descendants had ruled Tyre for at least a few generations. I don't remember the details to that. As a digression, in verse 31 of that passage, it is manifest that Ahab's marriage to Jezebel was sinful, where it said, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam. I only recently realized the implication that this would help to support the argument that Jezebel was a Canaanite. However, that still cannot be said with absolute certainty. That may still be argued. It's not proof enough in itself, at least in my opinion. Here it is important to note that Ahab did not take Jezebel to wife until some time after he became king. So it reads, and it came to pass that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal. So how much time is in and it came to pass. And that's going to be important as we proceed. We don't know, and I'm not going to try to make a determination. But it seems to me it could have been a year, 2 years. And the importance of that will become manifest as this unfolds, I pray. Ahab ruled for 22 years before he died, as we also read in that passage. He was succeeded by two sons, who were the sons of Jezebel. About that, there should be little doubt. The scripture portrays these sons as being of age, grown or nearly grown men at the time when they came to rule. Since Jezebel was acknowledged in scripture as having been their mother, it is evident that these men must have been born towards the beginning of Ahab's rule, since they are of age when they successively became kings of Israel, but their ages are not recorded in scripture. So we read in 2 Kings chapter 9. And it came to pass, when Joram saw Jehu, that he said, and that Joram is Jehoram, the son of Ahab, that he said, "Is it peace, Jehu?" And he answered, "What peace? So long as the whoredoms of thy mother Jezebel and her witchcrafts are so many." This is describing the death of Jehoram, the son of Ahab. So we are getting ahead of ourselves, but I just wanted to illustrate how it is explicitly stated that Jezebel is the mother of this Jehoram, so she must have also been the mother of his brother Ahaziah, whose place Jehoram had taken. And Ahab had many other sons. He had 70 other sons. But one woman would be considered the wife in ancient times. And the Persians and the Babylonians and other regional kings had done the same thing. One woman would be considered the wife. It doesn't matter in what order women were married. One woman would gain the honor of being the wife, and all the other women were secondary wives or concubines, and their sons would not inherit, generally, among these pagan kings. So surely Ahab was a pagan king. He would have followed their customs and not the hereditary laws of Scripture. So it would be Jezebel's sons that inherited the throne, and we see that that is true, because she was the favored woman, or the wife, the one with the designation of wife. So upon the death of Ahab, his son Ahaziah became king and ruled for only 2 years. This is recorded in 1 Kings chapter 22 and also in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 49, where we read, "Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 2 years over Israel." In 2 Kings chapter 1, it is recorded that Ahaziah fell down through a lattice in his upper chamber that was in Samaria and was sick. And he sent messengers and said unto them, "Go inquire of Baalzebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover of this disease." I think that reference to 2 Chronicles chapter 22 probably should have been 1 Chronicles. I'm going to check that and possibly repair the notes. Ahaz fell down through a lattice in his upper chamber that was in Samaria and was sick. And he sent messengers and said unto them, "Go, inquire of Baalzebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover of this disease." The prophet Elijah was sent to confront him. Those words were given to Elijah. And we read a little further on that he told him, "Is it not because there is not a god in Israel that we should go to inquire of Baalzebub, the god of Ekron? Now therefore, thus saith Yahweh, thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art gone up," the bed of his sickness, because he fell down through the lattice in his upper chamber. So he must have been a grown man and not a little child in order to crash down through the lattice. Thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art gone up, but shalt surely die. And Elijah departed. Ahaziah must have been Ahab's oldest son with Jezebel. If he was 20 when he came to rule, he would have been born about 2 years into Ahab's reign as king. The passages we have just cited surely indicate that Ahaziah was of age when he became king, since as soon as he became king, he was already active in the affairs of neighboring nations and even able to send servants abroad, and therefore he seems to have had some experience in the court of his father. So Ahaziah died a very short time later, but he had no son of his own, and therefore Ahab's second son, Jehoram, succeeded him. So we read towards the end of 2 Kings chapter 1, in part, from verse 17, "And Jehoram reigned in his stead in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. It was that other Jehoram, the king of Judah, to whom Ahab had given Athaliah as his daughter in marriage." Jehoram, or Joram, the son of Ahab, ruled for 12 years. When he became king, he was old enough to lead a census of all Israel, to issue challenges to the king of Moab, and to lead troops in battle, as it is described in 2 Kings chapter 3. So he too must have been of age. If he was 20, then he was born perhaps 2 years after his brother. That would be perhaps around the fourth year of Ahab's rule. But here there is also a problem evident in the text. Jehoram, the son of Ahab, could not have become king as late as the second year after the death of Jehoshaphat, because Ahab died no later than the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, and Ahaziah only ruled 2 years. So he in turn must have died in the 19th year of Jehoshaphat, who ruled for 25 years. Perhaps Jehoram of Judah may have had a co-regency with his father Jehoshaphat before he died. But whatever the case, counting the years of the kings, 2 Kings chapter 3 is certainly more accurate in this regard. So I believe in one place the co-regency was reckoned rather than the actual kingship of Jehoram the son of Jehoshaphat. So in 2 Kings chapter 3 verse 1, we read, "Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years." Now, that is accurate. So perhaps Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, did have a co-regency for some time, because his father was 60 years old, or close, when he died. But even there, in 2 Kings chapter 3, where it says that Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, there we seem to be off by a year or two, and an error of 2 years in this case may be within reason, and I'll explain why, because of the different ways in which years were counted by different ancient writers. Sometimes a king's first year would not begin to be counted until the end, or I should say, until the beginning of a particular calendar year. And sometimes it began to be reckoned immediately. Therefore, once a king served for a year, the anniversary date would already be in his second year, the first year plus one day. Or sometimes the second year would not be reckoned until the beginning of the next calendar year, depending on how the years were being counted. Those and other differences in counting have been the subject of debate among historians and archaeologists for many years. If Ahab died in the end of the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, and if Ahaziah only ruled for 1 year and part of a second year, It is quite possible he died in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat towards its end, and there is no error at all. So it's difficult sometimes to assess what is meant by these years. If a king is said to have ruled for 2 years, he may have really only ruled for a year and 6 months, or a year and 8 months, or a year and 4 months. Both sons of Ahab may have been younger, but as scripture portrays them, they could not have been much younger, because they were grown men and active in the leadership of their nation when they became the king. Then, having been sons of Jezebel, they could not have been much older, because Ahab didn't marry Jezebel until sometime after he became king. If Jezebel was pregnant immediately, they may have been up to a year older than we estimate here. We estimate that each of these men was 20 when they became king, so that, therefore, the younger son of Ahab, Jehoram, was a year or perhaps 2 years younger than his older brother Ahaziah, who took the throne from Ahab when Ahab died. So my point here, which is an important part of my conclusion, is this, that Ahab married Jezebel sometime after he became king, and in the very early years of her marriage, she was giving birth to these two sons. Now, to get a better understanding of the age of Jehoram, king of Judah, and also of these men, we shall go back to the beginning of the rule of Jehoram's father, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, because Jehoram, the king of Judah, was the husband of Athaliah. He is the central figure here. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 41. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa ruled for a long time, 41 years. So these men ruled Judah for a long time. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign in Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhi. Jehoshaphat did not become king until he was 35, because his father Asa ruled for a long time, 41 years, from 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 8 through 10. When Jehoshaphat became king, Ahab may have been at the very beginning of his fourth year, or at the very end. So with subsequent events, we can always be off by as many as 11 months and some days, which can easily elide into a year when reckoning when compared with other events. So where it says in the fourth year, we can only be assured that 3 years were already completed, and a fourth was underway. We should also note that in reference to the rule of Ahab, Jehoshaphat died in Ahab's 29th year, because Jehoshaphat was said to have ruled 25 years. So if he started in the fourth year, he must have ended in the 29th year. Then, if Jehoram of Judah ruled 8 years, the son of Jehoshaphat, he apparently died in Ahab's 37th year. If partial years were counted as full ones, then this may have been even sooner, because partial years were often counted as full ones. If Jehoram, king of Judah, ruled 8 years, he could have ruled, or he was said to have ruled 8 years, he could have ruled 7 years and 6 months, and they just rounded out to 8 years. He could have ruled 8 years and 2 months as well, and it would have possibly rounded it out to 8 years. 1 Kings chapter 22, from verse 48. Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold, but they went not, for the ships were broken at as a young Geber. Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, unto Jehoshaphat, Let my servants go with thy servants in the ships. But Jehoshaphat would not. And Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers, and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father. And Jehoram his son reigned in his stead. Ahaziah the son of Ahab began to reign over Israel in Samaria, the 17th year of Jehoshaphat king of Judah, and reigned 2 years over Israel. Jehoshaphat would not have died until he was about 60, as he became king at 35 and ruled 25 years. So his son Jehoram, who succeeded him, would have already been of age for some years. As we had said, the death of Ahab would have been no later than the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because his 22-year rule preceded Jehoshaphat by at least 3 years. Jehoshaphat became king in Ahab's fourth year. It could have been 3 years and a day. It could have been 3 years, 11 months, and 29 days. But here, the difficulty with the 17th year may be rectified, where it says here that Ahaziah became king in Jehoshaphat's 17th year, not his 18th. If Ahab was very late into his fourth year, when Jehoshaphat became king of Judah, it may be possible to squeeze 21 years and some months into the period before the beginning of Jehoshaphat's 18th year. 3 years and 11 months before Jehoshaphat became king, and this is for example, and I should note that, 3 years and 11 months before Jehoshaphat became king, plus 17 years and 11 months after, add up to 22 to 21 years and 10 months. So each period may have been a few months less, and still, Ahab could be said to have ruled for 22 years. But perhaps he actually ruled for just a little less, and that's the only way that he could have died in Jehoshaphat's 17th year rather than in his 18th year. Then, after the death of Ahab and Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, who was married to Athaliah, became king, and we read from 2 Chronicles chapter 21. Jehoram was 32 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. So this Jehoram was 32 years old when his father Jehoshaphat died. Then, since his father was king for 25 years, and Ahab had already been king of Israel for nearly 4 years when his father became king of Judah, this Jehoram was at least 3 years old when Ahab had become king of Israel, and 7 years old when his father became king of Judah. Then, after the death of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 25, in the 12th year of Joram, or Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, did Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, begin to reign. Now, this Ahaziah is an instrumental figure here because he's the son which Jehoram, the king of Judah, had with Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab. 22 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri, king of Israel. She was actually the granddaughter of Omri, because Ahab was the son of Omri. And this displays another problem with the way in which the years were counted. The text of 2 Kings chapter 1, verse 17, concerning when Jehoram the son of Ahab became king, cannot be correct unless it counted a co-regency. But the text of 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 1 is further supported here with some caveats. If Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, ruled only 8 years, But Jehoram, the son of Ahab, ruled for 12. Then he became king for about 4 years before Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat. And that works out very well. On the surface, that may be as late as the 20th year of Jehoshaphat. But the text tells us he became king in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat. So for the same reasons which I have already explained, there could be as much as a 2-year margin of error. But another passage brings us closer than 2 years, which is 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 29, where it says, "And in the 11th year of Joram, the son of Ahab, began Ahaziah to reign over Judah." So we see an error of 1 year by the scribes of 2 Kings, where in one chapter it says that Ahaziah, the son of Joram, the king of Judah, became king of Judah in the 12th year of Jehoram, the son of Ahab. But 2 chapters later, it says he became king in the 11th year. I'm sorry, 1 chapter later. The difference between 2 Kings 8:25 and 2 Kings 9:29. If, as we have also seen in 1 Kings chapter 22, Ahab died in the later half of the 17th year of Jehoshaphat's rule, which is necessary for him to have been king for 22 years. And Ahaziah ruled for only a year and a part of a year, counted as 2 years. Then there is still time for Jehoram, the son of Ahab, to have become king before the 19th year of Jehoshaphat's rule had begun. Then, if Jehoshaphat ruled for only 24 years and a part, and Jehoram for 7 years and a part, it may be possible that Jehoram, king of Israel, was in his 12th year when Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, became king. So Ahaziah, king of Judah, was 22 years old when Jehoram, king of Judah, was no older than 32. And Jehoram's older brother, but deceased brother, also named Ahaziah, was no older than 34. So these men were about 10 and 12 years old, and absolutely no older when Ahaziah, the son of Athaliah, was born. They couldn't have been older. They might have been younger, but they couldn't have been older because of the time when Ahab married Jezebel and the earliest time that she could have started having children. There is some more confusion in the scriptures when we read the corresponding passage in 2 Chronicles chapter 22. "And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah his youngest son king in his stead," he being Jehoram the king of Judah. "For the band of men that came with the Arabians to the camp had slain all the eldest." So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, 42. And he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was also Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. Wherefore he did evil in the sight of Yahweh, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. Here it is highly unlikely that Ahaziah was 42 when he began to reign. First, 2 Kings chapter 8 says he was 22. Secondly, 2 Chronicles chapter 21 and other sources say that Ahaziah's father died at age 40 because he was 32 when he came to rule, and he ruled 8 years. He may have died at age 39. Those two verses are in harmony with the overall narrative. So how could Ahaziah have been 42 when his father died? He must have only been 22. So we see another error by the scribes in that chapter, that 22nd chapter of 2 Chronicles. Furthermore, since Ahaziah must have been born by the time his father Jehoram was 20, if there were other sons who were older, as the passage in 2 Chronicles chapter 22 asserts, then they must have been born when Jehoram was very young. That is possible, especially if it was Omri who arranged the marriage of his granddaughter rather than Ahab, which is indicated by his mention here in each of these passages, that she was the daughter of Omri. And if Jehoram of Judah and Athaliah were wed at a young age, it's possible that Jehoram had other sons. We cannot rule it out. Perhaps they were married at 16. Perhaps she could have had 2 or 3 children before Ahaziah. That's not too fantastic. It's possible. Therefore, seeing the age of Ahaziah, and that's what's most important here, seeing the age of Ahaziah, when his father died at 40, that he was already 22, Athaliah must have become pregnant with Ahaziah when Jehoram, his father, was about 18. And about 14 years before he became king. This is no more than 37 full years after Ahab had become king that Ahaziah is 22 years old. So Ahaziah was born no later than the 15th year of his grandfather Ahab's reign. And this is substantiated in a couple of different ways, which we have already done here. If Jehoshaphat ruled from the 4th year of Ahab for 25 years, he died in what would have been the 29th year of Ahab's rule. Then, his son Jehoram ruled 8 years when 22-year-old Ahaziah, the son of Athaliah, became king. That would have been in the 37th year of Ahab's rule, as we said earlier. So Ahaziah must have been born in the 15th year of Ahab's rule, and no later, but perhaps even a little sooner. If Athaliah was the very first child and daughter of Jezebel, then she could not have been older than 11 years old, maybe 12, maybe 13, when her son Ahaziah was born. I should say she couldn't have been older than 13, and that's the truth. So did Athaliah have a son at 13? And the one passage claims, or I should say asserts, that there were other older sons. I will clarify this later, but here I would make the assertion that if Athaliah had a child in the 15th year of Ahab's rule, then she must have been at least 16 years old, and therefore, with all certainty, she was born by a different mother before Ahab took Jezebel to wife. Since he was already king for some time when he did, because he got married to her as it came to pass after he became king. That could mean a year or 2 years, and it came to pass sometime after he became king. Not the next day, not even the next month, and it came to pass. So, in 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 1, we read, "And Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria." If Ahab had 70 sons, were these all from Jezebel? Or did he also have many wives? Of course he also had many wives. Then, since there was a 50% chance that he also had 70 daughters, he must have had many wives. Or were these all from Jezebel? She may have been a whore, but it is doubtful that she had 140 children. Ahab must have had many wives, and Athaliah must have been born from another woman before Ahab took Jezebel to wife. So my conclusion is Athaliah could not possibly have been the daughter of Jezebel, and Scripture never states that she was. This makes fools out of generations of Bible so-called scholars, but they are all wrong. Plain and simple, they are all wrong. Jezebel was not an ancestor of Christ, because Jezebel was not the mother of Athaliah. As a digression, I did add the original text to this argument as a comment to my Women in the Genealogy of Christ presentation, which is from June 21st, 2009. But I never even refined the original notes for that presentation. And now, today, I have revised these notes. So, maybe this will convince me to revisit it all soon and create a new podcast that is more complete. So now I will offer a clarification of my argument, and I will repeat a few passages, and this is from a different perspective, slightly. 2 Kings chapter 8, and in the fifth year of Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat being then king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. 32 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, as did the house of Ahab. For the daughter of Ahab was his wife, and he did evil in the sight of Yahweh. Note that there is no mention of Jezebel. 2 Kings chapter 21. Jehoram was 32 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab. For he had the daughter of Ahab to wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of Yahweh. And once again, there is no mention of Jezebel. Athaliah is called the daughter of Ahab on these two occasions in Scripture, and a daughter of Omri, her grandfather, on a few others, but she is never called a daughter of Jezebel. So again, I will repeat 1 Kings chapter 16. And in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of Yahweh above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. Assuming that Jezebel is the mother of Athaliah, how long a time is it when it came to pass that Ahab married Jezebel? Sex was marriage in the ancient world, so there was no called premarital sex. Jezebel could not have gotten pregnant before it came to pass, sometime after Ahab had already become king. And another king, Ethbaal, isn't going to give his daughter away just for sexual gratification, typically. Even if he's a whore and a Baal worshiper, he's going to look out for his own daughter. And that's the hypocrisy of many men in prominent positions. So let's make an assumption. If Jezebel was really the mother of Athaliah, some people might pronounce that Athaliah, which I don't agree with. I believe it should be Athaliah. It should be really like Athaliah would be better. Athaliah, because that I-A-H is Yahweh. If Jezebel was really the mother of Athaliah, let's say that Ahab was king for only 3 months when he married Jezebel, even though it came to pass, seems to suggest, a later time. So Ahab marries Jezebel after being king 3 months. And Jezebel gets pregnant immediately. Then we must suppose that the first child is Athaliah. In that manner, the earliest that she could have been born is near the turn of Ahab's second year as king, as the second year is just beginning. That's the earliest she could have been born. But two sons were also born soon after Ahab married Jezebel, in order for them to come of manhood before he dies, which the scripture indicates that they had. So perhaps Athaliah was a twin, or Jezebel had two other sons within 2 years of this time, very quickly. This is a peripheral circumstance, but it still must be considered. The circumstances of the birth of those sons is never described, nor are their precise ages ever mentioned when they either became kings or when they died. There is never a mention, also, there is never a mention of twins in this context. So if Jezebel had gotten pregnant and had Athaliah immediately after she married Ahab, then she was born at the very beginning of Ahab's second year, since the gestation period would have been 9 months, and this also counts on the fact that Ahab went and got her as a wife immediately after he became king. So, all these factors, in order for Athaliah to possibly be the daughter of Jezebel, all these factors and more have to be met. So, then Athaliah would have been, since the gestation period would have been 9 months, Athaliah, at the beginning of the third year of Ahab's rule, would have only been 1 year old, because she was 0 years old. She was just born at the beginning of the second year of Ahab's rule. So being 1 year old at the beginning of Ahab's third year, after 12 more years, at the beginning of Ahab's 15th year, if Jezebel was her mother, Athaliah would have only been 13 years old. Therefore, if that was the year that her son Ahaziah was born, then she would have had to become pregnant and have a child at age 13, because by Ahab's 16th year, she would have to be 14 years old. And she had that child in Ahab's 15th year. But if Athaliah was not born until Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, was born, speculating that they were twins, she would only be 10 or 11 years old. But she could not possibly have been any older than 13 years at the beginning of the 15th year of Ahab's rule, the year in which Ahaziah, her son, must have been born, if Jezebel was her mother. And here we see that that if is impossible. Jezebel was certainly not her mother. For Athaliah to have had a child in Ahab's 15th year, which is absolutely necessary to account for the fact that that child was 22 years old when he became king. For Athaliah to have had a child in Ahab's 15th year, she would have had to have gotten married and pregnant no later than age 13 and 3 months. And the baby must have been born before the first day of Ahab's 16th year. This is highly unlikely. Athaliah is never called the daughter of Jezebel because she was not Jezebel's daughter. Now, let's put this another way. Another way that I don't even have in the notes. Ahab dies after being king 22 years. His one son rules 2 years. Another son rules 12 years. So, it's really less, each of those figures is really less 1 year plus a few months, as we've already demonstrated. But let's take those figures. Ahab rules 22 years, and Ahaziah 2, and Jehoram 12, and altogether, that's 22, 24 plus 12 is 36 years. And Ahaziah, the king of Judah, is born before the fulfillment of that 36 years, because he's born in the 11th year of Ahab's second son. So let's deduct 22 from that 36 years, and we come up with 14. Just doing it that in that simple, simple way, we see that Ahaziah, the king of Judah, the son of Athaliah, must have been born in the 14th year of Ahab's rule, not even in the 15th. So how old was Athaliah when she had this child? Was she 10? Was she 11? Or the plain and simple truth is Jezebel's not her mother, even though the whole Christian world thinks that Jezebel was her mother. And this is what most, at least most of the churches teach. I don't know if all of them teach it. I can't say it, but I looked through the Google results and it seems like it. We can play with the dates and ages and imagine people who have been born at the very beginning or end of the year in order to try to shoehorn Athaliah into being the daughter of Jezebel. But it is all speculation and stubborn insistence, and it is also practically impossible. If we calculate Ahaziah's birth even more accurately, it is likely that the 15th year of Ahab, as I just demonstrated, for that birth, is late rather than early. So we're not trying to cut the times down in order to make it impossible. It just is impossible. So that makes it even more unlikely for Athaliah to have been a daughter of Jezebel. She was not. And now, we may see that for a long time, all of the churches have been teaching speculation as fact, when it is actually contrary to fact. Okay, now we will discuss the identity of the Rechabites and the Kenites of 1 Chronicles chapter 2. And this was originally posted at the Christogenia Forum on September 11th, 2022. In the past, I had understood 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 55, to be describing Kenites, descendants of Cain, and not Kenites as Smiths, who were of the tribe of Judah. The word Kenite may be interpreted either way, as we have explained in other contexts and in relation to other passages. This is even found in a few of my own early commentaries. And I'm going to dig this passage up, actually, because I don't have it here. I'm sorry. And it was the manner in which the passage had always been interpreted by older Christian writers, such as Swift, Comperé, and even Clifton Emmaheiser. We all fell for it. I guess Swift and Comperé just took it for granted, but it's wrong. It is not necessarily correct, and in the context of the longer passage, it seems to be discussing Smiths who descended from Judah. And that would make more sense in light of the passage concerning the Rechabites, which is found in Jeremiah. And once they are all interpreted correctly, these passages, or I should say once they are both interpreted correctly, this passage here in 1 Chronicles chapter 2, and the passage concerning the Rechabites in Jeremiah chapter 35, once they are both interpreted correctly, they serve to explain one another. So what I am about to explain, I have not had the opportunity to put in writing before I first posted this in the forum in September. And now I have it here. 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 55 reads, and the families of the scribes, which dwelt at Jabez. And these names are important. The Tirathites, the Shimeathites, and Sukathites. These are the Kenites that came of Hamath, the father of the house of Rechab. The sticking point here is where it says that these are the Kenites that came of Hamath, which is from Hamath, which is also the name of a city in northern Syria. Additionally, there are no mentions of any man of Judah named Hamath, or of any Tirathite, Shimeathite, or Sukathite, or of a Tirath, a Shimeath, or a Sukath, anywhere else in Scripture. So these points make it seem that the interpretation that these scribes were Kenites by race is correct, because in early times, through the Judges period and that of the books named after Samuel, no Israelite could have come from Hamath, and there was no Rechab or any mention of these other cities. So it may seem, on the surface, that neither interpretation can be proven. Kenite as Kenite, or Kenite as Smith, because there is a lot of missing context. But on the other hand, just a few years ago, I forget how long, I gained a better understanding of these genealogies in 1 Chronicles. There is a Rechab who is mentioned in Nehemiah chapter 3 in verse 14. But the dung gate repaired Malchiah, the son of Rechab, the ruler of part of Beth Hasarim. He built it and set up the doors thereof, the locks thereof, and the bars thereof. If this Malchiah had set up doors, locks, and bars for the gates of the walls of Jerusalem, which Nehemiah had been rebuilding, then he must have been a smith, which is a Kenite in the sense of a smith and not in the tribal sense. He may have also been a more remote descendant of Rechab and not necessarily an immediate son. On the surface, it seems that the genealogies of 1 Chronicles should all precede the time of the historical narrative which the book presents following those genealogies. But that is not the case, and that has left room for misconceptions when something is read, but the wider context is not closely examined or even understood, because many people just don't take the time to really understand these genealogies before they comment on them, and I myself have been guilty of that in the past. The books which we know as 1st and 2nd Chronicles were evidently compiled from older books after the return to Jerusalem at the beginning of the Second Temple period. This can also be proven in the genealogies of the first several chapters of 1 Chronicles. There is one chapter devoted to the descendants of Adam through Noah and down to Abraham. And then it lists some of the early descendants of Abraham's other sons and of Esau. Chapter 2 begins a genealogy of the children of Israel. Chapters 2, 3, and part of 4 are the descendants of Judah, David, and Solomon, for which there are 102 verses. Then Simeon gets only 20 verses at the end of chapter 4, and even that's a lot compared to some of these other tribes. In chapter 5, Reuben gets 10 verses, Gad 7. And there is a 9-verse history of the 2.5 tribes east of the Jordan River. The descendants of Levi and Aaron get 81 verses in chapter 5. You might see that Judah, and Levi have a much fuller genealogy than these other tribes listed so far. And then in chapter 7, Issachar gets 5 verses. Benjamin gets 7. Manasseh gets 6. Ephraim gets 10. And Asher gets 11. There is no genealogy for Zebulun, none at all, and 1 verse in chapter 7 for Naphtali. In chapter 8, the descendants of Benjamin are described in another 40 verses, in addition to the earlier 7. Then in chapter 9, there is yet another general description of the genealogies of Israel and Judah for 40 verses, and most of that also only concerns Levites. Finally, at 9:35, the descendants of Saul are mentioned again, and in chapter 10, the historical narrative of 1 Chronicles begins with the death of Saul and his sons. So, what is evident here is that the genealogies of the tribes of Judah, Levi, and to a lesser extent Benjamin, are much more developed than those of the other tribes, because the returnees to Jerusalem in the Second Temple period were from those tribes, and therefore, that is when 1st and 2nd Chronicles were written, compiled from older books, with contemporary information added. Then, on top of that understanding, an examination of the genealogy of the tribe of Levi reveals that it extends all the way down to the Second Temple period, which is why it is so lengthy compared to the others. The genealogies of all the other 9 tribes are comparatively short, as they hardly extend beyond what was written in the earlier books, such as the Book of Numbers. That supports the fact that by the time when Chronicles was compiled, the other tribes were long in captivity, and their own genealogical records were lost, except for what the people in Jerusalem had in the books of Moses. So here I would assert that the truth of the matter is that, like Levi, the same is true in some ways of the genealogy of Judah in 1 Chronicles chapters 2 through 4, and I'm confident that a fuller investigation would support and clarify that assertion. It needs to be clarified because it's only really portions of the genealogy that are carried all the way down to the Second Temple period. For example, Zerubbabel is mentioned in 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 19, which by itself proves my assertion that the genealogy for Judah is extended into the Second Temple period, since Zerubbabel means sown in Babylon, and since he led the Babylonian captives who returned to Jerusalem, the reference could only be to him. He led the first Babylonian captives. There was another group which came with Ezra. So the reference could only be to him. So, and the surrounding verses in chapter 3 of 1 Chronicles will support that. So in this light, I must now hold the opinion that the Kenites, or Smiths, of 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 55, who lived in those places, none of which had any previous mention, must have been men of Judah, who may have even returned to Jerusalem from Hamath, rather than from Babylon. That may reveal that they were taken in the earlier Assyrian captivity of Judah, rather than the Babylonian. But it is even more plausible that Hamath was also the name of a man of Judah who was in the captivity in Babylon, or who lived even earlier, who was a more recent ancestor of Malchiah than was Rechab. Remember the man in question in that passage that we read from Nehemiah. The smith of the time of Nehemiah was named Malchiah, and he was called a son of Rechab, but that doesn't make him an immediate son. He didn't have to be an immediate son, but just a descendant. And it must have been a certain Rechab whose name would have been recognizable in the Second Temple period, but who was not mentioned specifically in earlier scriptures, except for Jeremiah. In that light, the genealogy of 1 Chronicles at the end of chapter 2 actually explains the origin of the Rechabites of Jeremiah chapter 35. So Hamath would have been a Rechabite like the Rechabites in Jeremiah, and he would have been the elder of what had survived of the Rechabite clan in the Second Temple period. The Malchiah of Nehemiah chapter 3 was one of the Rechabites, and he was also a smith to set up the doors and the bars and the gates. He would have had to been able to create those things. Therefore, the Rechabites of Jeremiah chapter 35 were of that same house of Rechab, and they were not Kenites in the tribal sense, but rather they were smiths from of the tribe of Judah. Here we see that they descended from Caleb. And that's all I have to say about the Kenites and the Rechabites. But those Kenites are smiths. So I think I have to amend perhaps two or three of my podcasts. I think it's two. It's not many because I shied away from the interpretation some time ago. I don't remember exactly when. It may have been just a few months. It may have been a couple of years that I stopped using that as an example. I don't remember. I really don't. But that's okay. It doesn't really matter. It's an error, and we must correct it. That's our task. That's why we do this. That's why we continue studying. If I didn't want to correct even myself, I would just stop reading the Bible, period. But of course, we cannot do that and be followers of Christ. And with this, this was originally posted at the Christogenia Forum on the 30th of August, 2022. It had come up in the Christogenia chat that afternoon, so I thought to write this quickly and post it in the forum. I've added a few notes to it for this presentation. This will only take a few minutes. This is a plausible chronological sequence of the Old Testament books, because that too is very often misunderstood. And I just wanted to give this a rundown to round out this podcast, because it's only about an hour and 5 minutes right now, perhaps, I'm guessing. And we'll try to make it an hour and 20, perhaps. So, if I had just a few minutes to present a reasonably accurate chronological sequence of canonical Old Testament books, this is what I would come up with. And this canon is slightly different than that of the traditional churches. There are a few caveats I will discuss below. In this list, I will also discuss what books of the Old Testament, including the Apocrypha, that I believe belong in our canon. So we have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. I'm not going to discuss the details of them too much at length. And then Joshua. And they should certainly be the first six books of Scripture. Of course, Moses died near the end of Deuteronomy, so it must have been finished by another hand. And the same is true of the book of Joshua. But the book of Joshua was probably not written by Joshua at all. It was probably written by the scribes of the time or the priests of the time. We can't imagine that just because a man's name is on a book that he wrote it when it's in the Bible. Paul said that Israel had judges for 450 years in Acts chapter 13. And that's an estimate which must also include the days of Moses and Joshua and the later time of Samuel until Saul. So that 450 years actually covers from, in my opinion, from at least the time of Sinai to the time of Saul, but it may have only covered from the time of Joshua to the time of Saul. And I believe it was from Joshua to Saul, if memory serves me correctly. I don't have, what I need right now is my King James Bible, because I actually do have that time calculated through the pages of the book of Judges, but I don't have it with me. I'm on a road. After that, we have the book of Judges, and then after the book of Judges, we have Job. But Job is actually contemporary with the early half of Judges. And then we have the book of Ruth. But Ruth is actually contemporary with the later half of Judges. Then come 1 and 2 Samuel. Now, 1 Samuel, of course, is mostly the rule of Saul. And 2 Samuel is mostly the rule of David. In fact, it's all the rule of David. The prophet Samuel died before the book known as 1 Samuel ends. So it too must have been finished by a later hand. Then in 1 Chronicles, in chapter 29, we read, "Now the acts of David the king, first and last, behold, they are written in the book of Samuel the seer." And of course, a lot of the life of David is in 1 Samuel, but he is not yet king. And in the book of Nathan the prophet, and in the book of Gad the seer, where it becomes evident that the books known as 1 and 2 Samuel must have been compiled from these three books mentioned here, as both of these men were contemporary with David and advised him often. I should say it's all of these men, because even Samuel was contemporary with David. So Samuel must have been the primary author of 1 Samuel, and then perhaps one of these two other men, Nathan and Gad, had completed 1 Samuel, and their books were compiled into 2 Samuel, which is what I sincerely believe. I used to think that the books mentioned written by Nathan and Gad were missing, but that doesn't account for how we have 2 Samuel. So I sincerely believe that 2 Samuel are the books of Nathan the prophet and Gad the seer, men who were contemporary and frequently advised David. Next is 1 Chronicles, and after those 9 chapters of genealogies, this book is contemporary with 2 Samuel from chapter 3. And then there's the Psalms, which were written in that same time, for the most part, but not completely. Some Psalms belong to an earlier time. Some belong to David, and those of Asaph are from a much later time, written in Babylonian captivity. And that's very clear from the context of the Psalms of Asaph. So, then is 1 Kings, which covers the period from Solomon through the time of Ahab. And 2 Chronicles also begins here with the rule of Solomon, and it covers over 300 years. So all of these later books, for the most part, all the way up to the time of Nebuchadnezzar, are covering or were written in the same period which is covered by 2 Chronicles. So, Second Chronicles begins here with the rule of Solomon, and then we have the Proverbs and the wisdom of Solomon, which I sincerely believe belongs in Scripture, and then the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, and then Ecclesiastes. And not necessarily in that order, but that is the way that I would order them. And then, after the time of Solomon, there's Second Kings, which covers basically from the time of the sons of Ahab to the time of Nebuchadnezzar. From at least as soon as the middle of chapter 17, it is written in retrospect by later hands, because Samaria was destroyed. Second Chronicles begins with the rule of Solomon, just like First Kings, but it covers more time, going beyond both First and Second Kings. So sometimes I want to list it later. Jonah was the earliest of the minor prophets, perhaps as many as 100 years before Hosea. And he could be squeezed into Second Chronicles, of course, after the time of Solomon, but before the time of Hosea, who was much later. I believe Hosea actually started in the days of Jeroboam II, if I'm not mistaken. Then is Isaiah, and Amos, and Micah, and Hosea and Isaiah were contemporary. In the later part of Hosea, I believe Hosea belongs in the early years of Isaiah, but may have started a few years before Isaiah. And then Amos and Micah are contemporary with Isaiah, but perhaps a little later in time. That's my opinion. I can't really prove it, but that's the feeling I get from reading the books and the context of the books. It's possible Amos and Micah were from the same time as Hosea, or earlier in Isaiah. But after those four prophets, there's Nahum and Joel. And they were both after the Assyrian deportations of Israel, but before the time of Jeremiah, when Jeremiah began in 627 BC. And then there's Habakkuk, who was a contemporary with Jeremiah, and Zephaniah, who was a contemporary of Jeremiah, and both of those men were prophets before Ezekiel. And then we have Ezekiel, who began shortly after going into captivity, circa 604 BC. So Jeremiah and Ezekiel are contemporaries, but Ezekiel is really only contemporary with the second half of Jeremiah, the later half of Jeremiah. And then we have Susanna, which I believe is a legitimate book, and it introduces the prophet Daniel to the world. Then there should be Lamentations in chronological order. Of course, Kings and Chronicles all overlap with these, right? I mean, 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles are still running here. They still haven't run out. Right? Not until after the final destruction and captivity of Jerusalem. So, then we have Lamentations. And of course, this would be where those historical records end. And this is Jeremiah writing after the destruction of Jerusalem. And then I placed Daniel. Daniel actually began shortly after going into captivity, circa 604 BC, the same captivity that Ezekiel was caught in. Ezekiel and Daniel both wrote from captivity. And Daniel was also contemporary for that reason with the later half of Jeremiah, but I place him a little later because his immediate prophecies concern and were written at a much later time than most of those in Jeremiah and Ezekiel. So even though while Daniel started in 604 BC, and that's where I would put Susanna in that time period, and that's where I would put, of course, the early chapters of Daniel, which concerned Nebuchadnezzar. But much of Daniel that was written in the Persian period is long after Ezekiel and Jeremiah had passed from the scene. Daniel was very young when he started and lived a long time. After Daniel is Obadiah. Now, Obadiah is very difficult to date, but Obadiah was definitely written after the destruction of Jerusalem, with which Edom assisted, for which you could compare verses 10 through 12 of Obadiah to Psalm 137, verse 7, and to the book known as 1st Esdras, chapter 4, verse 45. And you'll see that Obadiah, many of the mainstream commentators place Obadiah early, according to rabbinical Talmudic tradition, but Obadiah was not written until after the destruction of Jerusalem, with which Edom had assisted. Then there's Haggai and Zechariah, and both of these men were contemporary with Zerubbabel, and with each other, of course, and the Joshua, who was the high priest of Zerubbabel's second temple when it was first built. Then we have Nehemiah and the return of Zerubbabel to Jerusalem with 42,000 circa 520 BC. Nehemiah's commission in Jerusalem was from 502 to 490 BC. Part of the last chapter is from an even later visit. And then there's Ezra. In spite of the way they are dated by all of the mainstream churches and all of the mainstream commentaries, they're all wrong, just like they're all wrong about Jezebel and Athaliah. So, I have my arguments concerning Ezra and Nehemiah elsewhere. They're on the Christogenia references page, the references link at the top of the page, and it's called the Notes Concerning Daniel's 70 Weeks Prophecy, and that contains my arguments for the correct order of Nehemiah and Ezra, in spite of what is even found in the early Septuagint manuscripts, which simply lumped the two books together. And I would contend they're lumped together in the wrong order. So that's a very ancient mistake. First Esdras, found in the Apocryphal, is actually, in my opinion, a better version of Ezra than what was preserved in the Masoretic text as Ezra. First Esdras is much more complete. The first part of Ezra is a repeat. It's retrospective. It's parallel to the time of Nehemiah. The second part, from the middle of chapter 6, I believe, is his own commission in Jerusalem, which was from 458 BC. After Ezra, there's Malachi. Sometime after Zerubbabel, Haggai, and Zechariah. But certainly before the coming of Alexander, circa 330 BC, was Malachi written, and Malachi is also difficult to date. We only know that the second temple is already built when Malachi had his prophecy. And following that, there is 1 Maccabees, which belongs in Scripture as it fills in some of the later period of the intertestamental period after the destruction of the first temple and before the coming of Christ. I should say after the building of the second temple and before the coming of Christ. And this order, and any other like it, is problematical. Many of the prophets, for example, should be in the middle of 2 Kings or 2 Chronicles, since those books cover hundreds of years, whereas ministries of the prophets were much shorter. Also, some of the Psalms were written by Asaph, who wrote after the end of 2 Chronicles, and at least one Psalm was written by Moses, who was much earlier. Both Job and Ruth are within the Judges period, not after it. Except for the chapters of the genealogies, 1 Chronicles parallels, parallels, I'm tripping over myself. First Chronicles parallels Second Samuel. Daniel started prophesying around the same time as Ezekiel, as I mentioned, but most of his prophecies are of much more distant events, so they are better off being placed after Second Chronicles. Tobit is a challenge, but I do not despise the book. I have not read it since maybe 2004, so I would want to read it again before deciding if I would include it. I have described it as a historical novel in the past, due mainly to some of its peculiar language. However, it is very possible that the book is a true story and belongs in Scripture, so I'm not going to make a decision on Tobit. If it were included, I would put it into this list just before Nehemiah. It has some really good statements on racial perspectives. I have quoted from Tobit, and in particular, Tobit chapter 4, verses 12 and 13. Its setting is Nineveh itself during the early decades of the Assyrian captivity of Israel. Baruch, I would also want to read anew, as it has been at least 17 or 18 years, probably longer. I remember having mild skepticism when I did read it, but I cannot remember the details. The Epistle of Jeremiah is often counted as the final chapter of Baruch, so I would reckon it there. Sirach is valuable in that it is the perspective of a pious man of the intertestamental period, very late 3rd century BC. But it is not prophetic. The wisdom literature of canon should be prophetic in nature, in my opinion. And all of the wisdom literature of David and Solomon are prophetic. Whether you think so or not, we could discuss that at another time. 2 Maccabees is not written like all the other books. It is not a priestly book or an official chronicle. Rather, it was written by Jason of Cyrene. From the more voluminous history, now lost, of Nicolaus of Damascus. So while it is valuable as another perspective on what we have in 1 Maccabees, I would not consider it biblical. 3 Maccabees does not belong in Scripture. 3 Maccabees seems like an Esther knockoff, just like another Jewish Shoah tale. It does not ring true to me, and it justifies Purim separately from the Esther account. It's like a different Shoah tale justifying Purim. Therefore, both tales, Esther and 3 Maccabees, in my opinion, they cancel one another out. One proves the other is a lie. And that goes both ways. 4 Maccabees, and of course, there are many other ways to prove that the Book of Esther is a Jewish Shoah tale, which I have already done at Christogenia. 4 Maccabees would actually precede 1 Maccabees for its chronological historical setting, but perhaps not for when it was authored. It may very well belong in this list, and I would place it before 1 Maccabees. I would want to first study the history of the versions better than I have. I have no real opinion on the Prayer of Manasseh, whether it be real or simply an embellishment on 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verses 11 to 13, or on the prayer of Azariah, or the so-called Song of the Three Young Men, which was also an apparent addition to the Book of Daniel. So, it's immaterial to me as to whether one wants to count those books as canon or not. I don't have an opinion because to me, none of them really, they really don't matter. They really don't. They're inconsequential because the material that they represent is in Scripture and because it does no damage to that material. But as to their veracity, that's another story. So it doesn't, I really have no opinion on those books. The books known as Esther, the additions to Esther, Judith, and Belle and the Dragon, all of them are complete fairy tales and have no part in Scripture. So 3 Maccabees, Esther, the additions to Esther, Judith, Belle and the Dragon, they should all burn in the flames of hell. They don't belong in Scripture. And that's all I have to say about them. And maybe one day I will elaborate on all of this, but I wanted to just round out this podcast and get some of this off my chest because I really haven't taken an opportunity to put it into an audio presentation in the past. Praise Yahweh, the God of Israel, and thank you for listening. Next week, I believe it will be Bertrand Comparé, and well, you'll find out next Friday. He has a paper, something, it's on my server and ready for me to download. Is it enough merely to be an Israelite? Where he's talking about salvation. And I know that I'm going to differ from him in at least some places. So I'm going to do a critical review of that paper at the request of a good friend who made the request actually last year, I believe. And I'm sure that I'll have my differences with Bertrand Comparé. But I think that in at least many places that we'll agree. Again, praise Yahweh, the God of Israel, and thank you for listening. And good night.